From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made just 1 year ago in the Finger Lakes wine industry. In the fall of 2014, you could drive past roughly 125 bonded wineries in the Finger Lakes and essentially not see a single solar panel. Just 1 year later, so much has changed. Nearly 10% of the Finger Lakes wine industry has either gone solar or plans to do so. It's a serious shift, and for many Finger Lakes wine professionals, it offers a different energy path. After all, this is a region that is vehemently opposed fracking and local gas storage projects. This hour, we welcome the people who are leading the drive for solar in the Finger Lakes wine industry. We're going to take your questions. Listeners, if you want to call the program, you can do that throughout the hour. It's 844-295-TALK. Let me welcome my guests, and they include Suzanne Hunt. She's the founder and president of Hunt Green, and her family owns Hunt Country Vineyards. Your brother and your sister-in-law own what, Suzanne? The farm, the food project.
Yeah, so they have Italy Hill Produce. So 25 acres of the farm are certified organic, and they grow all kinds of delicious vegetables.
And how many generations has your family and the Hunt family been there in Branchport?
Seven, eight, if you count little Will and Millie.
Yeah, we have to count them now. Welcome. Nice to see you in studio here.
Good to be here.
Also here is John Wagner, the co-owner of Wagner Vineyards. Nice to see you, John.
Yeah, good to be here, Evan.
And Glenn Steed is the owner of Steed Energy out of Rochester that's been involved in many of these projects. Glenn, nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
And Megan Frank joins us on the phone. She's with Dr. Frank Vinifera Wine Cellars down on Cuca Lake. Megan, nice to have you as well.
Thank you very much. Good to be here, and thank you.
Suzanne, a lot of your work in recent years, you worked in Washington for a while, and now you're back in your home region where you grew up near Cuca Lake in an industry that your family's been in for a long time. But we started this hour looking at a year ago. What was the scene a year ago? I mean, very little solar at all in the region, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would come home to visit as much as I possibly could and never really saw any solar. I was involved in, of course, the debate over fracking, the debate over the gas storage, and I'm surrounded by solar energy professionals, and I knew that the cost was going down rapidly. And so when I looked at the numbers, we had, you know, looked at them for the farm, for the winery a few years ago. When I looked at them again, I said, this is really viable now. We had already installed a geothermal heating and cooling system, and we had already done a number of other sustainability efforts on the farm. So when I looked at the numbers, it made sense, and I thought, well, you know, it's not a big deal if one winery goes solar. And actually, Lakewood had 47 kilowatts installed a couple years ago. And so, you know, a couple wineries go solar. It doesn't move the needle, but if you get, you know, a whole group of wineries going, it actually starts a movement.
And so you, through the work not only for your family, but on behalf of the region and through Hunt Green, you've been kind of lobbying the wine industry, haven't you? Just telling them, I mean, I'm sure they've had a lot of questions for you.
You had to throw the lobbying word in there, didn't you?
That's such a slur, I'm sorry.
And actually, it was a really fun, it was a really nice process. I got to kind of re-meet all these folks that I knew as a kid and spend, you know, a couple hours with, you know, dozens and dozens of the winery owners and really talking through the pros and cons and the steps to go solar and the different options for financing. And, you know, it's such a simple technology. There's no moving parts. You put it on the roof, so you do ground mounts. And the panels we're using have 25-year warranties. So really, it's good for the environment. And really, it was just a matter. It wasn't really even a sales pitch or a lobbying effort. It was literally, let's look at your bills. Let's look at the costs. Let's look at the local companies that do really good work and see if it makes sense. And it has for a number of them.
Now, in a moment, I'm going to ask Megan Frank, John Wagner, why they decided and their families and their operations decided to go solar. But first, what I want to do is take a look at this from that question of energy, because as Suzanne mentioned and as we've covered on this program, this is a region that is almost monolithically opposed to hydrofracking. Of course, there's the state ban now, but also an LPG storage project that Crestwood Energy wants to put kind of a massive expansion of their project down on Seneca Lake. We've covered that as well. And this past spring, Crestwood Energy sent a news release out regarding their plans for storing liquid propane gas, and the news release indicated that support for that project was growing. They had urged the media to get in touch with several supporters. Now, one of them was George Zemak, who owns Zemak Farms in Savona, and we kind of checked it out. Turns out that Mr. Zemak owns property next door to Crestwood's facility. Crestwood's been cutting Zemak a financial break on using their equipment. Now, I invited George Zemak to come on the show to explain why he supports the gas storage project, and one of the reasons is he says there's no energy alternatives. And he kind of attacked the critics of LPG storage as, quote, living in the Stone Age. I want to listen to what George Zemak said and then get the response of our panel.
They don't work for a living. They just around there just trying to get attention, trying to be heroes. They're going to say the one there, she's got a builds a new house and she puts a propane in. Oh, she likes propane, but she don't want it around here. Well, it don't matter no matter where you live. You can live in Alaska, and you don't want nothing there. You don't want nobody bothering you. You're in Alaska. You could be out in the desert. If wherever your home is, you don't want nobody there. Well, it's got to be. You got to have gas. You got to have. Nobody likes cow farms. I'm a farmer. They don't like cows. They don't like chickens. They don't like pig farms. But they all go to the store. Well, half them protesters are vegetarians, anyways. But they all protest. They don't want to live near a farm. They don't like the smell and this and that. Nobody wants a dump. But what do? They all got a bag of garbage by the end of the driveway at the sidewalk there, waiting to go. You got to have this stuff. That's all there is to it.
You got to have this stuff, Suzanne Hunt. I'll start with you. He's saying that he thinks the protesters of fracking and LPG storage are hypocritical and that this is the energy that's going to drive what we want to do, and you want to turn your lights on, don't you? Is solar an example that says we don't need that? You know, how do you view that?
Yeah, I think a lot of the discourse goes in the, you know, they take these extremes, like all or nothing, and, you know, no one's saying, you know, get rid of all fossil fuels tomorrow. What we're saying is that because of all of the various, you know, water pollution, air pollution, climate pollution issues, we have to transition off of fossil fuels. And in the case of the Crestwood proposal and others, you know, you look at each proposal on a case-per-case basis. The broader picture, though, is that, you know, in sharp contrast to the Stone Age comment, more renewable energy generation capacity has been installed than all fossil and nuclear combined globally every year since 2013. So every year, we've had, you know, over 150 gigawatts of renewables in 2013 and increasing. You know, basically, we've hit the tipping point. Renewables are where the investor community is going. And it's how we do the transition. Are we going to do it gracefully, where we do it as a community, where we all learn about it and we figure out how to accrue, you know, the most financial benefit to the community, local communities, or, you know, do we go kicking and screaming and let the savvy investors from, you know, from New York and San Francisco make all the money?
John Wagner, Wagner Vineyards decided to go solar. You heard Mr. Zemak saying we need propane gas. That's the energy future and we want to turn our lights on. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think we are aware that farming is energy intensive. The wine business uses a lot of energy, so I would not argue that we need those forms. I think the movement is how we can lessen our environmental impact. So for us, this was a perfect project. We've been looking at solar for 4 or 5 years now. Every time I've looked at it in the past, we couldn't make the numbers work as far as the payback period. But as more and more panels and components have been produced, the cost is coming down. And this time when we looked at the numbers, it looked great. And it's a movement that we felt really good about. My family's been growing grapes on the east side of Seneca Lake for 5 generations. And we really want to move toward full sustainability so that the land and air and water is there for future generations to continue and have a viable business there. We're not making business decisions looking 2 or 3 or 4 years out, we're looking 100 years out. So I think solar is a perfect fit for that.
And when you talk about the payback period that your family's been looking at over the years with solar, what is the payback period for you? How much financial sense does this make now?
This time around, it looks to be between 5 and 6 years that the system is going to be paid off. As Suzanne mentioned, the 25-year warranty on the panels. So there's definitely, with no moving parts, we expect them to even last longer than that.
Megan Frank at Dr. Frank Vinifera Wine Cellars, your family made this decision as well. And what were the considerations at Dr. Frank before you decided to go solar?
Yes. Well, I would like to echo a few of John's points. We had a very similar story where my father, Fred, had looked into utilizing solar energy numerous times. And it just was very overwhelming, the process. There's a lot of paperwork to fill out, figuring out the tax incentives. It's very overwhelming. And we couldn't really make the numbers work, just as John was saying. And this was really the first time that everything kind of fell into place. And also having District Sun and Suzanne walk us through this entire process made it a very easy fit kind of moving forward for us. So it's similar reasons to John over at Wagner Vineyards. We are looking, you know, being a family-owned business, we're looking towards the future. I'm the fourth generation of the business, so I'm looking to my future children's, future at the business as well. So this is a long-term decision, and moving towards a clean form of energy is really important to us. So having a sustainable outlook is really key, I think, to our success. So that really made everything kind of fall into place, and we're very excited about our installation. It's really wonderful.
And, you know, Megan, as Suzanne said, sometimes these conversations about energy do go to the extremes. You heard George Zemak. But I want to stress again, Crestwood Energy chose not to come on this program. We've invited them in the past. They directed me to people like George Zemak. And I know he had some strong words about it. But how would you respond to those who say that, you know, you can't oppose fracking, you can't oppose gas storage, that the industry and our region needs it, Megan?
I would respond to say I think Suzanne had a great point in that it should not be an all-or-nothing approach. This is a very emotional argument. You know, there's a lot at stake here. And we're just trying to do the best we can for our business and for the future of the industry here. We have such a beautiful region here in the Finger Lakes, and we're all just trying to capture that and keep it beautiful for future generations. And I think that's an important point. Also, a sustainable approach. You know, while the technology is here, we should utilize it. I think that's a really important thing. If everything makes sense and falls into place, we should utilize this technology. So that's how I would respond, I suppose.
All right, and Megan, I know you're pressed for time, but let me squeeze one question from Twitter in for you, and then I'll ask our panelists as well on this one. David writes to us, curious to hear your panelists' thoughts on whether solar detracts from any picturesque scenery. Is there a trade-off? Megan Frank?
I don't believe so. I actually think it looks really neat. It looks really modern. And I think people associate solar, you know, the look of solar with clean, green, renewable energy. So I think, if anything, the look is actually a positive experience for our customers coming to the winery. They see the solar panels. And, you know, they know we're utilizing green energy. So I think, if anything, it's a positive. It's a positive attribution.
And, Megan, on that point, Mike on Twitter says, JD Winery in Macedon went solar this year. JD Winery in Macedon is across the street and essentially with the same family that does Long Acre Farms. I took my son there on a mystery trip a couple of weeks ago to go to the corn maze, and we pull up and there's solar panels, and he's asking me about it. And he's three. So, Megan, I'm curious, are people already asking about, I mean, do you expect customers are going to inquire about solar when they see it at Dr. Frank?
Absolutely. Just last two weekends ago, actually, we had District Sun, Mark Kelly, who's the president of District Sun. She came in and she did a training for our staff, and we were there for the National Solar Day, where there were customers who actually came to see our new solar installation because of the National Solar Tour. So that was really neat, and it provoked a lot of conversation about why we decided to go solar and the other businesses involved, all family-owned wineries. And it was a really neat experience to see that customer interaction. And we are trying to kind of educate our consumers on solar energy in addition to, you know, our wines being at the winery. So it's a really neat kind of added educational opportunity.
Megan Frank is the fourth generation at Dr. Frank Vinifera Wine Cellars on Keuka Lake, and I know you're pressed for time. We'll let you go, Megan. Thanks for jumping in and sharing your thoughts on going solar down there.
Great. Thank you very much, Evan. Thank you.
Megan Frank. All right. John Wagner, same question for you then. David wants to know on Twitter, any worried about the aesthetics? How's it look to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a concern for us. We are on the east side of Seneca Lake from the winery. We look out over our farm and the vineyards down to Seneca Lake. It was one of the reasons we chose not to do ground mount in between that area. We do have some space on the west side of the winery, but we didn't want to have ground mount and look at the panels, so we chose roof mount. So there's a lot of options available. The panels on our buildings are mostly on our farm buildings that are down north of the winery. Those are flatter roofs, so they don't show as much. And then we also have them on our Ginny Lee Cafe to the south of the winery. So.
I actually think the ground mounts are kind of cool. I'm just going to say that. But, you know, I know to each their own, and that's interesting to get John and Megan's perspective, slightly different perspectives on what it looks like. Glenn, any difference in terms of installation, ground mount versus roof for you, for cost, for your customers?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some cost difference between a ground mount and a roof mount. On the ground mount, we actually have to build the structure that we're attaching everything to. With a roof mount, we're using the existing structure of the facility that's there. I think for actually all three situations, Hunt Country, Dr. Frank's, and Wagner, all three are roof mounts, and they make perfect sense for there. We've got large buildings with large roof space that really give us plenty of real estate without having to detract from what really are just the most beautiful settings. I mean, we've been so lucky. On Twitter, they were asking about the view, and I kept thinking, man, I've got the best view of everybody because we get to be on the roofs looking at, I mean, we're 30 feet higher than what everyone else gets to see. We really get the best views. It doesn't detract from the existing framework that each vineyard owner and family has really developed to create.
Go ahead, Suzanne. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the many benefits of distributed renewables is that they can be smaller and integrate into the landscape. So, you know, and these three wineries are a perfect example where we just fit the panels into the existing infrastructure. So they sit on the roofs. They'll actually help protect the roofs. And then we don't have to think, you know, 20 years from now when the panels are still there, still producing our power, what do we want to do with that, to that piece of land? Instead, you have them, you know, integrated into people's businesses and their roofs, and it's not a massive power plant. It's not a, you know, you don't have massive smokestacks and piles of coal. It's these elegant technologies that you know, hug your roof.
I think there's a great picture that Suzanne's mother, Joyce, took that I used on our WXXI page for connections when we were promoting today's show. So credit to Joyce at Hunt Country Vineyards. That you can see what the panels look like there. We're talking to Suzanne Hunt from Hunt Green, and her family owns Hunt Country Vineyards near Keuka Lake. John Wagner, the co-owner of Wagner Vineyards, and Glenn Steed, the owner of Steed Energy in Rochester, about a wine industry's decision in many ways to start going solar. And David, a different David, writes an email to me saying, by the way, Evan, it's not just wineries going solar in the Finger Lakes. Two Goats Brewing Company in Hector went solar this summer for many of the same reasons as the wineries. So absolutely right. And Suzanne, when we estimated 10% of the regions either, 10% of the Finger Lakes wineries in the region are either solar now or moving in that direction, signing contracts, making plans to go. It's not all through the same people, but there are a lot of conversations among various wineries and various providers. Fair?
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of momentum in the area. There's a lot of folks doing a lot of work. There's the Solar Skylar folks. There are a number of efforts. It just makes sense.
And Glenn, when it comes to what you do then, we always have questions about cost. You heard John Wagner and Megan Frank say why their families and their businesses, why they decided to do solar now, mm-hmm. is because for the first time, the numbers look like they're, feasible is different things to different people, mm-hmm. but they look better than ever. Why are costs coming down? And then this feels like the biggest softball in the world to a provider here. We're not doing an ad, but I want to know exactly why, what has changed in the last several years to put this in a position where John can come in here and say, it's different now. We feel like we can afford it. What's different?
We've finally seen sort of the snowball effect of people installing solar, and more people are recognizing it, more people are actually installing it themselves. And we have finally, we've had a viable technology for a very long time, but we finally have a viable industry that's really growing fast. It's viable both fiscally and developmentally. We've got a number of quality installation companies around. They're doing great work. And we also, I think the biggest thing is we have a steady supply chain now. We have panel manufacturers that are finally able to get up to speed and produce the quality and the quantity of materials that we need. The industry's seen something in the neighborhood of 400-500% decrease in module pricing in the last 5 years. And that's huge. That's what's driving the ability for anybody at this point to look at solar and say, hey, wow, this actually does make sense. Whereas even 4 or 5 years ago, it didn't make financial sense for them.
Sure. We got an email from a listener named Abby who was saying it was a number of years ago that she last looked at solar for their house, and it was $25,000 or $30,000. You know, that's is that an outdated number for someone's house?
You know, it all depends on the size of the system. Okay. I mean, we looked at a house. I did an installation right here in the city of Rochester earlier this spring, and about 6 years ago, they had gotten a quote for the same size system that I did, and it was a very small system. I think their quote was almost four times what we actually ended up installing the system for. Just amazing difference in cost. And that's materials. That's the cost of materials has dropped so significantly. And on top of that, we really have like a, I think with the vineyards that we did, we've got awesome products going in there. All U.S. manufactured materials. We have solar panels made right here in the United States with U.S. sourced materials. We have inverters that are made right here in the United States. We have all of the racking and mounting materials comes out of Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and Texas. I mean, this is all U.S. materials going into these systems. The panels that we used are from the oldest U.S. manufacturer of solar panels. So it's really such great quality stuff. And as an installer and a business owner myself, I think I really like knowing that we're supporting jobs here. We're supporting jobs at home. And hopefully what we're doing and what I'm doing and trying to create jobs in my own company is also creating jobs within these other companies as well.
How many people work for Steed Energy?
I have 5 employees at this point, and then I have contract employees that I use as well.
You got room to grow?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we have a number of questions rolling in via email that I want to get to. Grid versus non-grid, more cost questions. Listeners, if you want to call the program, this is a great time to talk about what's going on in solar, and especially in the light of, from the business side, we're talking about the Finger Lakes wine industry that has seen a big change in just 12 months, and our guests are talking about that. Tim in Pittsford writes the following email. Here's a bit of dissent, and I'll kick this over to Suzanne Hunt from Hunt Green. Tim writes, people keep talking about a sustainable approach, but solar's business model is not sustainable. I've said it before, there's not one solar company that can survive without a large dose of our tax dollars. My old neighbors have had solar in which the final bill was $19,000, but after tax incentives, the bill came to just $6,000. Does that sound fair to the rest of us who are paying for their solar but can't afford the upfront cost of putting them in? I hope those wineries are appreciative to their fellow taxpayers for this large gift. Tim in Pittsford. Suzanne?
Yeah, so unsurprisingly, I've heard that kind of sentiment before. And so first point, fossil fuels are still subsidized at dramatically higher levels than renewables. So I'm happy to send out, and I've already sent you, Evan, some of the global subsidies reports, statistics from the IMF and OECD and others. You know, right now, globally, fossil fuels get 4 times the subsidy.
Okay, but hold on. Susan, let me just jump in there and say, when we post the podcast, Tim in Pittsford and anybody who wants to know more about that, we'll post the link as well to what Suzanne's talking about, because it does come up a lot. Who gets subsidized more, what rate, et cetera.
Right.
Go ahead.
Another point. So the NYSERDA grants, that is not tax dollars. That's money that power purchasers like the wineries have been, those are pots of money that we've been paying into for years and years and years, and we're now taking money back out of. In terms of taxes.
And just to clarify that the NYSERDA funding, anyone who pays a bill to the utility, other than a municipal utility supplier, is paying into the funding for this. It's one of the line item charges on your bill. Tim can look at his. It's going to say RPS, and that he pays into that. He is more than capable of getting solar and getting his NYSERDA grant, just as everyone else has in the program, his money
Part
back.
Of his argument is that he might not be able to afford the upfront cost, and then he feels like he's subsidized.
You know, and that's one of the things, Evan, too, that I think has really changed in the industry in the last year. Especially in New York, we've got a lot more funding opportunities for solar. We have banks that are opening up loans to homeowners as well as businesses to be able to put solar in their house. There's some different leasing opportunities. I really think we've only hit the tip of the iceberg in what funding opportunities are out there for both residential and commercial systems. I think next year, as the market grows even bigger in New York, we're going to see even more things coming into play. So there's so many different funding opportunities where folks don't have to have a large chunk of money up front to be able to go solar and do the right thing that way. They can do loans. I've got a number of customers that are going through the Green Bank, which NYSERDA works with. We've got some different loans. We've got an on-bill financing thing right through NYSERDA. I've got a customer who signed up for that. So they don't have to come up with this huge chunk of money to be able to actually put solar at their residence.
Okay. Suzanne, you want to weigh in on any more to Tim there?
Yeah. And, you know, it's painful to write that, you know, you're check to the IRS when, you know, paying taxes is not something that anyone loves doing. And so I totally understand and share the desire to use our tax dollars responsibly. And so I would, you know, like to see Tim and folks like Tim get really ticked off about the $700 billion a year that the U.S. that are of U.S. tax dollars that goes to subsidize the most profitable fossil industries in the history of humanity, i.e., the fossil fuel industry, petroleum in particular. So, you know, I really, people keep bringing this up, and really, I would encourage them to look at that because they should be outraged about the subsidies going to fossil fuels that are also, you know, spewing pollution, impacting health, et cetera. And then the other thing on, you know, a few people, and it's not a lot, most people are really excited about this, and they see that it's a win-win-win for the community. But for the handful of people that are very vocal, vocally upset about this, think about if the wineries went away. So if the piece of land that my family farms and grows wine on, if we stopped growing wine, if we closed the winery, there would be dozens and dozens of jobs that would go away. There'd be all the tax revenues that our business creates through sales tax. There's all the income tax that our employees pay and that we pay. So I think, you know, really, if you look at the whole system, it's a net benefit for everyone.
John Wagner, how many employees at Wagner Vineyards?
We employ about 100 people.
About 100 people.
Yep.
And how many cases of wine a year?
About 40,000 cases.
40,000.
Yeah, and so, you know, I think you really wanted us to talk about Crestwood on the show, Evan, and I think we really wanted to talk about solar. But, you know, they're proposing to create 8 jobs, you know, 8. And, you know, just John employs 100 people. We employ, you know, part-time and full-time, anywhere from 50 to 80 people at Home Country. So, you know, just then that's 2 wineries out of the 125.
We try to do real-time fact-checking, and I can tell our listeners Suzanne is right. We have looked into that. Crestwood is not promising any more than 8 jobs. It's true for the gas storage expansion project there. But Tim, you know, thanks for the question and the concern there. Let's do this. Let's get a short break in, and we're going to continue our conversation. We'll take more of your questions because I got an email asking, you know, what do you need to be on the grid for solar? And maybe Suzanne and Glenn can explain what that question means if you haven't looked at it, into it yourself. And talk much more about an industry that is making energy decisions that they hope will impact their bottom line now, the environment now, and our world for many, many generations to come. Sometimes we think about long term as if it's 10 or 20 years. You know, I'm a big fan of this planet for a lot longer than 10 or 20 years. Short break and much more straight ahead in Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, it's Veterans Day. We're going to talk about various organizations that are helping veterans in our area, from outreach to services and to help for caregivers as well. That's first hour. Then second hour, Josh and Jenna Miles join us. They're the owners of The Revelry, Bronca, and more. They're launching new restaurant projects at Midtown and in Canandaigua. They'll tell us why.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Nazareth College Arts Center, presenting magician and illusionist Mike Super of America's Got Talent, Saturday, November 21st at 8 p.m., with a separate ticketed VIP pre-performance event at 6. Details at artcenter.naz.edu.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we're talking about the Finger Lakes wine industry's move towards solar. If you're just joining us, about a year ago, very little throughout the region had solar. Suzanne Hunt, from not only her family's operation at Hunt Country Vineyards, but also Hunt Green is her company. She's the president and the founder of Hunt Green. She has been helping the industry take a look at solar from various angles, especially in the last year. And a year ago, you said Lakewood Wine down on Seneca Lake, they had solar panels, and that was just about it?
Yeah, and, you know, I haven't surveyed the whole industry, so I'm sure I'm leaving people out. I know Mark Wagner at Lamoureux had panels on his house right near mm-hmm. the winery. And I know a number of wineries have recently put solar in that we haven't mentioned yet. So I don't want to, you know, leave people out. There are certainly a few smaller systems, but Lakewood's the only one I know of that has been in place for a couple of years. And they're excited, you know, to keep pushing the envelope on the sustainability side.
Before I bring in our next guest via the phone, I just want to ask Glenn and Suzanne to respond to an email, actually a couple emails from people asking about, you know, is the solar grid ready, whether it's at their house or in the Finger Lakes wine industry? Glenn, what does that question mean, first of all?
The solar grid, I'm not exactly sure what that question means. I mean, I think what folks are talking about is the utility accepting this, and are we able to tie in? And we are. The utility is accepting this distributed generation, and we have been adding solar to houses and businesses all over New York. New York City's a great market down there. as well as upstate.
Okay. Any concerns about getting on the grid or you know, being able to utilize solar at home or in businesses, Suzanne?
Yeah, I mean, if people in the industry talk about grid defection, you know, and this is a really topsy-turvy time in the energy sector, you know, I think it's fair to say that the electricity sector is going to change more in the next 10 years than it has in the last 100. So it's very scary for the utility companies. They're having to change an a business model that's never changed in its entire existence. It's very hard. And so because they're very slow to change and to evolve, many of them, not all of them, a lot of people are just saying, you know, I'm gonna defect from the grid. I'm gonna go off grid, and it's a decision. You have to look at the physical location and the service they have and the costs and compare the pros and cons.
All right, Andrea has two questions. She wants to know, as a thought experiment, what would happen if the government stopped subsidizing all energy, solar, ethanol, fossil fuels? Suzanne,
I would love that. You know, if the government would just stop it would just stop subsidizing everything and
create
level
an actual free market.
Yeah, I mean that would be far better than what we have now. But that said, the government is supposed to act in the public interest, and right now, all of our scientists are telling us that the ecosystems that support life, that support life on this planet and that support our societies, are really suffering right now, and there's a lot of damage that's been done, and we need to transition off of these polluting technologies. So since there are so many subsidies and it is such a confusing, difficult marketplace, and it is so hard for these new technologies to get a foothold with the incumbents and all of the various ways that they've embedded themselves and their interests, I would love to see all the subsidies just go away. But you know, in the benefit of the public, we should be encouraging the sources of energy that have the most public benefit.
Lisa writes to us and says, FYI, Evan, Sheldrake Point installed a solar system a number of years ago. Great discussion. So there you go. And Lisa, you're right. We're going to leave somebody out, I'm sure, in this discussion, which is just a sign of how much the industry is going this way. Andrea also wanted to know briefly, are California and other wine regions doing this, Suzanne?
Yeah, I was just on the phone with the sustainability director for one of the wineries in Napa that makes about 2 million cases a year, discussing all of this. And so there's definitely a big push in Sonoma for sustainability initiatives. I've had a visit from one of the big wineries from Long Island that wanted to see what we're doing up here. There's definitely interest in other places, but I think I think this push is a way for the Finger Lakes to distinguish itself for sure.
And Andrea also wanted to know if our guests could share what their bill used to look like and what it looks like now, thanks to solar. John Wagner.
Well, our system is due to be powered up here this week, and about half of it this week and the other half next week, so we're not currently seeing the new bill yet. We do have about $70,000 a year in energy costs right now, so it's due to take about two-thirds of that away.
So your expectation is to go from $70,000 a year to $25,000?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. Let me bring in another guest who's on the phone with us right now. Justin Bach is on the phone. He's the Senior Director of Research at the Solar Energy Industries Association. And Justin, hope you can hear us. Nice to have you on the program. Thanks for taking the time for us.
Great. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Justin, what do you make of this industry? I mean, I think what Suzanne is saying is, yes, we're seeing certain industries, certainly in California, the wine industry, but this is a chance for this region, they think, to distinguish themselves and stand apart from the pack and be forward-looking and be very serious about the way we think about energy in the future. I mean, Adam Frank is an astrophysicist who's also very concerned about climate. He's been on this program before talking about the fact that he thinks changing essentially the grid, changing systems is hard, but we've done it. We've proven we can do it, and we can do it again. What do you think of what this industry is doing here in the Finger Lakes?
I think it's great. I live in upstate New York myself, just outside of Syracuse, and I think that it's a place that if we demonstrate that we can do it here, then it really means that solar is ready for any place in America. And I think that the wineries, with the leadership of the people on this call here, are really are really showing that that can be done. And in fact, we've seen a smaller development in other industries in other parts of the country. But, you know, we see other industries that use a lot of electricity. Data centers, for example, around the country are starting to use more and more renewable energy, and solar in particular. You'll see Apple has, I think, somewhere between 40 and 60 megawatts of solar power at its data centers in North Carolina. And, you know, that's enough to power thousands of homes. And I think it's, you know, really telling that the snow belt of the U.S. can make solar systems pencil out. It really goes to show that it's not just about having, you know, the scorching hot sun of Death Valley in California that makes something like this work. It's about getting all the pieces together right and having people sort of forced away for, you know, the second and third adopters to come along and you know, have an easier road.
Let me get to
the first installations are always the hardest, and then you know, everyone subsequent to that, they have the benefit of the experience that that the early adopters provided.
Let me go ahead and grab a phone call because Kate in Greece is wondering about making solar available, and she's got a question. Go ahead, Kate.
This may be naive, but first let me give you an example. Dairy farmers form cooperatives where they work together. They're all dairy farmers. Well, how do we take the solar the people collectively and give them power? Can you form an energy collective or cooperative? And that would give, let's say I intend, and this is true, I intend to move out into Farmington, Shortsville area, and I as soon as I find a location, I will go solar. So how do we plug our collectively join together? It may be some sort of a legal, with some legal clout. So like I say, a cooperative, can you take energy and make a cooperative out of it?
Kate, thanks for the phone call. Suzanne Hunt.
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. So two quick things, and then I think Glenn probably wants to jump in. New York State just passed a community solar bill, so take a look at that, and we can put some information up on Evan's website. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that there are some really great examples, you know, as the caller said, of farmer co-ops. I have friends in the Midwest who, you know, were, you know, close to losing their farms and then, you know, got together with their neighbors and built wind farms. You know, that doesn't necessarily work everywhere, but there are lots of examples of where farmers have developed co-ops to implement group renewable projects, and they've made a lot of good money. And then the question is, how do you manage the money? Because it can be managed well or poorly, but that's a whole other conversation.
Glenn, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, Kate, that's a great question. I think one of the things we see as the industry is growing is more and more people wanting to group together and get into solar. There's some great group purchase opportunities in the industry right now. There's more localized campaigns for that. We also do some stuff with some of the different businesses that we work with, where we'll offer some discounts to employees of the business who want to do solar, since we're there doing solar as well. There's a lot of different opportunities that are out there, and at this point, it depends a little bit on the area that you're in as to what opportunities exist.
On the question of wind, Beth on Twitter says, I thought wind is the only cost-effective way to power up central New York. Wind electricity, 6 cents per kilowatt hour. Solar, 46 cents per kilowatt hour. Is that, and she's citing openpv.nrel.gov for those numbers. Justin, you want to jump in on that?
Sure. So, you know, I'm familiar with the website she's citing, and I think it's mostly populated with very old data. I think if you were to look at the prices available today for solar energy, it would be less than a quarter of that, even in the not-so-sunny areas of upstate New York. So, I think it's the challenge is the costs in the industry have been falling so quickly that it's really difficult for anyone to keep on top of it. So, you know, example of this is the fact that so many of these wineries had looked at solar just a couple of years ago and then looked at it again this year and found that actually nothing pencils out. So if you've looked at it before and it looked too expensive, really keep your eye out and look again, because chances are it's probably now making economic sense for you.
Yeah, and I would just add to that and say that, you know, there's big differences between, say, utility-scale solar and residential solar. So listeners, make sure you're looking at the appropriate type of solar.
A number of other questions coming in. We're going to try to get through as much as we can for the rest of the hour. Michelle online is asking again, can you please share links to the fossil fuel and renewable subsidy information? And the answer is yes. Again, it's we podcast every program, wxxinews.org/connections. And when we do that today, Megan and I will make sure that we've got the link there to what Suzanne was talking about. And the source on there, on the subsidies came from, what was the international, was it?
The most recent one was came out this year from the International Monetary Fund. So okay. International body, no political ties to anyone.
Okay, so Michelle, yes, we will make sure that gets posted. A number of other, let's see here, let's go to Brian in Brockport. He wants to jump in as well. Go ahead, Brian.
Why is it, this is relative to the lady who asked about collectives, why is it that some towns like Fairport or Spencerport can have municipal electric, which is half the price or less of places like RG&E?
I'm going to let Justin jump in on this,
Justin,
but it has to do with the hydro in the state.
Once again, Justin is on the line with us. He is the Senior Director of Research at the Solar Energy Industries Association. And Justin, you want to weigh in there?
Sure. So I mean, that's highly specific to local conditions. You know, that there are some cooperative utilities and municipal utilities in New York, and this is true around the country as well, that operate different from the publicly owned regulated monopolies. And oftentimes, I've seen in New York, it is sometimes built around some local hydro project or some local cogeneration project with a local large user of energy, and they happen to be able to buy power as sort of almost a byproduct of something else that's happening nearby. That gives them advantages that are available to everyone.
Go ahead, Brian.
It seems to me that RG&E is not publicly held. They are privately held. And once a year, these smaller towns will publish a list of all the sources of their energy. And a good deal of it comes from Niagara Falls and every maybe a dozen different other places, but they are not publicly held. They are publicly held. Versus, why can't Rochester just get rid of their privately owned energy source and go public?
What? It's kind of up to the people of Rochester. Some towns in other parts of the country, including, I think, maybe Boulder, Colorado, have been looking into taking over their local utility. But it's a highly local decision. And in New York, at least, it wouldn't necessarily give the local government complete control over the sources of their power. But you know, I think what's true is that anyone can take control over their own source of power by choosing to go solar. So if you want to make a very personal decision, you can do that.
Suzanne Hunt?
Yeah, I would just add, you know, the Boulder example is a good one. And often what you see is people who step up and lead on these things. You have people that are really passionate about it. They get really smart about it, and they help get everyone else really smart about it and engaged. The other thing I would say to the listener is that New York State is quite unique right now in the nation in that they are working on a process called the REV, Reforming the Energy Vision, which, you know, the intention is to transform how the electricity sector is regulated so that, basically, to bring it into the modern age. You know, we have had this electricity system that was set up, you know, over 100 years ago where power was made in these huge generation facilities and it was sent out to the customer. Now we have all of these technologies that are rapidly outcompeting the big, dirty fossil plants. We have smart grid technologies, smart thermostats, all kinds of digital technologies to reduce demand and move power around. So, and the regulatory environment hasn't caught up with the technology, which is commonly the case. And so you're going to keep an eye on the REV process, engage in the REV process. If New York does that right, we will be, you know, leading the nation.
We are, in some ways, you know, Suzanne and I have had conversations over the years about energy, and you can be tough on politicians who kind of fall into same old thinking here. And you've had a lot of praise for the state in where we're going with energy, yeah?
Yeah, the goals are right. You know, the goals are to change so that rather than the electricity companies making money based on how much power they sell, which gives them the inherent disincentive to encourage efficiency and distributed renewables, to change it so that they get compensated based on the quality of services they provide, which, of course, one would hope would result in much better service. The question now is all in the implementation. The goal is right. Will they implement it?
And if you want, I'll also throw up a link this afternoon to a very interesting piece that The New Yorker did a few months back about what's going on in Vermont. Not every utility is the same. Not every utility has the same approach to this. Some are really resisting. Others are more on board and want to be kind of included. Green Mountain Energy in Vermont is in that group. And it's very interesting, case by case, to see how the utilities are responding to some of this. So I think part of the reason I think that there is resistance is, you know, as we've talked about in this program in the past, 1890, we didn't have gas stations on the corner. 30 years later, we did. We had gas. It's pretty simple. There's not a single industry that's going to dominate the energy future, and that makes it more of a question. It's kind of a hybrid, and the government has had some problems picking winners and losers. Corn-based ethanol didn't go so well. So I feel like, you know, Suzanne, I feel like that question makes it, you know, we're not replacing fossil fuels with one easy thing at one time.
No, and actually, you know, I was just listening to a program this morning about how terrorists are targeting the power grid, and one of the former CIA directors wrote the foreword to my biofuels book. So for years, we were on the speaker circuit together, and he would always talk about how seven well-placed rifle shots could take down the grid. And so part of the benefit of this distributed renewable energy system with all of these diverse technologies, as you point out, is that, you know, it's just like an investment portfolio. You would never just pick one winner. You have a diverse set of options so that you're more resilient to all kinds of threats.
I think that's one of the subjects of Ted Koppel's new book, which is brand new, just out, and on the same kind of subject, on the vulnerability of our current grid. I was going to get back to the phones. We're almost out. We're winding down on time, so let me just work one more question. And Alan writes to us and says, this has been wonderful news and very impressive. How come wineries aren't marketing this? So John Wagner, I mean, it's sort of strange to boast about solar panels, but, you know, I mean, Alan is saying he wants to hear it. Maybe he'll be a customer of yours if he knows.
Sure. I mean, we definitely are talking to our customers about our sustainable practices that we do on the farm, things that we've been doing for years that we talk about now. I mean, we mow and bale 150 acres of hay, and people would go, well, why do you do hay for a vineyard operation? But we unroll that hay in between the rows to conserve moisture, suppress weeds, help prevent soil erosion. We're doing all kinds of things that are sustainable. And this just fits. It just fits into that same vein of direction that we're heading. So yes, we are talking to our customers about it, and we will continue and continue to look for new technologies that fit. I mean, we are aware that we're using a lot of energy, and we're just looking for the best alternatives that we can go to get sustainable.
We have a lot of listeners today at our sister station, 89.5 FM, Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS out of Geneva. And Shannon Brock down at Silver Thread writes to the program and says, thanks for covering this today, Evan. We went solar last month, October 23rd, just a few weeks ago, with a 28-kilowatt system designed to supply 100% of our energy needs. Customers are extremely interested, and at least three have signed contracts for their own domestic solar systems since hearing about ours. That was an unexpected but welcome side effect. Pretty cool stuff. Suzanne Hunt, 5 years from now. Alan wanted to also know, one of our listeners who wrote in, how many wineries are going to be solar in 5 years in the Finger Lakes?
You know, it was interesting. When I first started talking to the wineries, I thought it might make sense to do it, you know, group purchases, get the cost of components down, make it easy so we can all learn together. But every winery is so different. The sizes are so different. The personalities are so different. Everything's so different. So initially, some of the local banks were talking about setting aside pools of money to fund, you know, just for wineries for solar. And then they realized they just had to do it one by one. So, you know, that aside, I think, you know, 5 years from now, I we could have half of the wine industry solarized. You know, I think geothermal, there's a lot of heating and cooling. There's a big thermal load at the wineries, so geothermal, I think, is also going to take off. I already have wineries talking about that. And in 10 years, I think the whole state could be 50 to 80%.
Roughly 1% a year ago, maybe 10% now, and that's the trend line that we've been talking about. Just over a minute left. Kyle in Fairport has a question a lot of people have. I was surprised we didn't get it yet. We'll finish the hour with this. He says, I agree that no fossil fuel industry should be getting subsidies, but Rochester only gets 61 full sun days per year. If the state's going to put taxes on consumer energy bills to subsidize the solar industry, shouldn't we at least expect efficacy from our tax dollars? Wouldn't it make a lot more sense for the state to subsidize solar installations in regions where they are more effective? Glenn and Suzanne, help us with that real quickly.
On average, we get 4.2 hours of usable sunlight a day, every day, throughout the year. So when we design systems, we're designing systems based on historical data, weather data, snowfall, all of this information that, again, if we're selling a system to anybody, whether it's a large winery or an individual homeowner, we want to make sure that when we're giving you an estimate of how much the system's going to produce and ultimately what your payback's going to be, that we're right. Because everyone's going to be pretty upset if we're wrong.
John Wagner's going to find out. If it's $70,000 in energy costs a year and he's hoping for around $25,000 and it turns out it's actually $65,000, you'll have some questions in a year, won't you, John?
Definitely have a few questions.
but I understand, Kyle, the question, but this has come up before, and it is in my understanding that cloud cover doesn't stop the sun.
Not at all.
You know, you can get sunburned on a cloudy day, Suzanne.
You can, and there's also the issue of risk. You know, if we are stuck with infrastructure that only burns gas and coal, say, you know, we don't know what the cost of those fuels will be in 5, 10, 15 years, but we know the sun and the wind will still be free.
They want to contact Glenn and Steed Energy. Online where, Glenn?
SteedEnergy.com or on Facebook at Steed Energy.
Hunt Green, where do they find you, Suzanne?
HuntGreenLLC.com. Cell phone is the best way to reach me.
You can find John Wagner at your local wine shop, Wagner Vineyards. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming
Thanks,
in. Suzanne, family. Thank you. Say hello to your family, Hunt Country Vineyards. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
And Italy Hill Produce
Absolutely.
As well. Justin Baca, thank you, Justin, for taking the time. And Glenn Steed as well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
A lot more questions we even had time for. Thanks for all the great stuff this hour. Val LaBanca, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. This is Connections.